had learned to hold herself in a similar way, but she couldn't help being jealous of the ability to simply stand there. Exuding control and confidence was so much easier when you weren't several feet shorter than everyone. "Thank you," Rissen said to her.
"We have a charge from the Queen to see this mission to its end," the captain said. "I'd turn around now if I worried about losing my ship, but I won't do so on a whim."
"Do you truly believe what I said about this being a good omen?"
"I believe that passionate people make their own luck," the captain said,
which wasn't exactly an answer. The passions, as a religion, believed that wanting something changed fate to bring it to you. Among many Thalans, superstition and confidence interwove like threads in a rope.
"Thank you, either way," Rissen said.
"For now, I trust your confidence to move forward, Rebsk," Captain Durlwan said, as sailors returned with hooks. "Take care. This crew is precious to me. I will not waste their lives if this mission turns ugly."
"If it turns out these omens are accurate," she left unsaid. Rissen nodded and sat back, troubled, watching the sailors cast the lines to hook the Xanthid body. If they couldn't get a purchase, someone would have to climb down and... Sailors screamed, backing away, dropping the ropes as if they'd suddenly burst aflame. Rissen started, then pulled herself up on the railing to look down. Was the Xanthid alive? It was moving, more undulating, quivering, disintegrating. Before her eyes, the Xanthid broke apart into hundreds of scuttling pieces. Kremlings, crustaceans the length of a person's thumb, swarmed in the water. Rissen struggled to grasp what she was seeing. Had the hooks disturbed creatures that had been eating the dead Xanthid? But there were so many, and the entire beast was breaking apart, including the shell. Storms. It was as if the body had been made up of kremlings, or sealings, as the ones in the ocean were sometimes called. The water churned and frothed, and in moments, nothing was left of the Xanthid. Even the eyeball she'd felt watching her earlier had broken into multiple pieces, exposing legs and shells on the underside before swimming away into the deep. 9. Later that night, Rissen sat in a little cove, watching the bonfire send smoke toward the halls far above. The chill air smelled alternately of the ocean and of smoke, depending on the whims of the wind. She pulled her shawl closer. She often felt colder than others seemed to, though tonight she didn't call for Nikli to take her closer to the fire. She needed some solitude, and so she remained in her chair, some 20 or 30 feet apart from the others. She listened as Lopan told stories to the sailors. Fortunately, his efforts to raise their spirits seemed to be working. After consulting with the captain, Rissen had ordered a shore landing to burn prayers in honor of the Xanthid. They'd broken out a few kegs of a special Thalan ale, and Cord was cooking a stew. Cumulatively, their efforts seemed to mollify the crew. The undercurrent of the evening, however, was still confusion. Everyone seemed as baffled as Rissen was. What kind of omen was this? A corpse appeared, then vanished? Had it been a corpse at all? Nikli sat nearby. Chiri Chiri slumbered on the ground next to Rissen. The Larkin seemed to be getting worse, sleeping more and more, eating less and less. Rissen's heart trembled every time she thought about it. Her spanreed finally began blinking. She snatched it up and oriented the board and pen, then let it start writing. "I have answers for you," the pen wrote. Vastim was dictating to his niece Chanurm from the look of the handwriting. "The Alethi have been keeping a secret from you and from me as well, though Queen Fen did know about it. While everything Queen Navani told you about the mission is true, there is another more vital reason she commissioned this expedition. There was once an oath gate on Akina. Rissen read the words again and let the implications sink in. An oath gate? She hadn't tracked their locations. She probably should have. Why did Amia have one? She asked. Wasn't it barren all the way before the recreants? No, Vastim wrote via his niece. The scouring happened after that, though both were so long ago that we don't know many details. Apparently, though, the capital had an oath gate, like Thalen's city and Azamir. Queen Navani's team on your ship is supposed to investigate what happened to it. And open it? Rissen wrote back. I gather they aren't certain they want it opened. Securing Amia, particularly Akina, would require a large military force. Right now, the Queen merely wants information. Is the Oath Gate there? Does it seem like the enemy has been investigating it? Is the island habitable? So Nickley was right. The Radiants had been keeping things from her. At least their secret was a fairly innocent one. What of the other thing I asked you about, Babsk? Rissen wrote to Vastim. On this matter I've been less successful, he dictated. None of the scholars I talked to have any idea what to make of your story of the disintegrating Xanthid, though it does smell a little like some of the old stories about Amiens. That they could take off their arms and legs, Rissen wrote. I met one of them on that expedition where I had my accident. That creature seemed very different from what we experienced. True, Vastim dictated. But I spoke with Queen Yasna Kolin about what you wrote to me, and she found it exceptionally curious. She says there were once two kinds of Amiens. One was the variety you saw. There are a few of them moving among the people of Roshar. As for the other, she read an old story to me about creatures that were living heaps of kremlings. They would grow in the attics of buildings, then devour the occupants. She says she once considered these stories fancies, no more real than things like the gloom dancer or sea hags from Thalen mythology. However, she notes that recently she's begun hearing more reports of similar things, and from credible sources. She urges caution. I'd appreciate any further information she can find, Rissen wrote. If this were the only oddity we'd encountered, I wouldn't be so upset. But following the other items I mentioned, Babsk, it seems like a pattern. I think someone on the ship is deliberately trying to frighten my crew. And there might be an explanation that is more likely than these ancient stories. In what way? Vastim dictated. How could some saboteur have created a Xanthid corpse like that? You remember what I encountered 6 months ago? Rissen wrote. Right before the Battle of Thalen Field? What if this was created by something like that? An enemy lightweaver, Vastim dictated. You think maybe someone made an illusion of a Xanthid corpse, then panicked as they realized you intended to tow it with you rather than sail away? Exactly, Rissen wrote. And they made the illusion break into kremlings as a way of covering up what they'd done. But in that case, he dictated back, wouldn't it mean an enemy lightweaver is close? Potentially on the ship? Rissen didn't respond. That was what it would mean. Though admittedly she didn't have a lot of experience with what surge binders could do, or the range of their abilities. I have a span read here to Queen Yasna, Vastim dictated to her. Just a moment. I am explaining your theory. I warned the others I would tell you what I had learned about the Oath Gates. I made it clear that I did not appreciate one of my friends being sent on a dangerous mission without full knowledge.
Rissen stared at the page.
Friend? He was her master, her teacher. Honestly, her idol. Did he actually see her as a friend, now that she was grown? Something about that made her start to tear up.
All right, Vastim dictated.
unaware of how that one word had affected her.
Queen Jasnah is agreeing with your theory. She wrote, "Of course, that is an astute observation. I should have seen that possibility. Our access to these powers is too new. We keep overlooking such things. Compliment your ship owner for me, and warn her that an enemy lightweaver is a very real possibility. And tell her that if there truly is one aboard, her mission is even more important, for it means the enemy is trying to prevent us from studying Akina." From this woman, I think that is high praise, Rissen.
When the pen didn't write more, Rissen sent a reply. "Well, I did almost get myself killed by one of those lightweavers a few months ago. It's not cleverness on my part to consider them. More an instinct for self-preservation."
"Yes," Bastim dictated. "Rissen, perhaps sending you on this particular mission was unwise. The more I ponder it, the more I believe we should have sent a fleet instead of one ship."
"Could we spare a fleet?" Rissen wrote, though she knew the answer. Their navy had been dealt a serious blow when the Parshmen, the Voidbringers, had turned. Most of the ships that remained were vital in escorting troop transports and preventing Thalen City from being blockaded. So no, a fleet could not be spared for an expedition like this. When no reply came, Rissen glanced at Chiri Chiri sleeping on the stones beside her. Then she started writing again. "Babsk," Rissen wrote, "you trained me for difficult remote work. You made a woman out of a selfish child, and that woman is now prepared to use her expertise. I can do this."
"I do not doubt that you can," Vestim dictated back. "But I don't want anything else to happen to you in my service."
She glanced at her numb legs beneath the writing board. "I will be careful," Rissen wrote, "and you have done a great deal for me already."
"Farewell, then," Vestim dictated. "I trust your judgment, but please understand that if you decide it is right to turn back, you should do so, regardless of what anyone says. You must lead this mission according to your wisdom."
If only the crew had such faith in her. She said farewell to Vestim, then packed away her spanreed. After that, she looked up at the dark sky, searching for Starspren and listening to the gentle crash of the waves. On her first few trips with her Babsk, she'd been so self-absorbed, so frustrated at missing out on parties and negotiations with powerful houses, that she'd completely missed the beauty of this. Stars above, a sea breeze, and the soothing whispers of an ocean calling her to its embrace. A soft sigh announced Nikli standing up nearby and stretching. He stepped over.
"Brightness," he said. "It sounds like the food is ready. I'm curious to see if Cord's stew is better than mine. I'm going to get some for myself. Would you like a bowl as well?"
"In a while," Rissen said, looking out at the ocean. Little waves spren, like crawling four-legged creatures with smooth skin and large eyes, rode the foam up onto the beach, then quickly retreated with the water. "Your village is in Alm, is it?"
"Yes, Brightness," he said. "Inland, up against the mountains."
"That's close to Amia. Do your people have any legends or stories about the place?"
Nikli settled down on a large stone beside her chair. "We do. A lot of the survivors of the scouring settled nearby."
"Blue fingernails?" Rissen asked. "And vibrant blue eyes?"
"No, there were also ordinary people on Amia," Nikli said, "though they wear their beards in that odd way that's popular in Steen."
"Oh," she said. "What have they told you? About the scouring? About their homeland?"
"Brightness, the scouring was a long, long time ago. What we know are mostly myths, passed from generation to generation in stories and songs. I don't know if any of it would be useful to you.
I'd like to hear them anyway, Rissen said. If it's all right with you.
He watched the waves for a time. It happened, he finally said, because of the fall of the Radiance. Emir had always been different. The people who lived there, they were close with the Radiance, and maybe kept too many secrets. They assumed their secrets would protect them, but then their allies fell, and secrets can't hold swords. Suddenly they were alone in the world, and they possessed vast riches. It was just a matter of time. Perhaps some of the invaders were genuinely frightened of the oddities in Emir, but most saw only the wealth. The Fabrials, the creatures who could stop shard plate, drain stormlight. He hesitated, his eyes focusing on Chiri Chiri.
I mean, that's what the legends say. I didn't give them a lot of credence until I met you.
That's fascinating, Rissen said, getting out a fresh sheet of paper to record what he'd said. Scholars around the world talk about Emir in hushed tones. But I wonder, have they ever come and interviewed your people?
I'm sure they've talked to the human survivors, he said, looking down. And there are immortals who lived on the island and now wander the world. I'm a poor source for information on this topic, Brightness.
Nevertheless, she said, what happened? How was the place scoured?
I don't know if my inadequate knowledge is of use to—
Please,
Rissen said. He continued watching the waves. A brave wavespren crawled all the way up the stone beach to their toes before turning and scuttling back into the water.
Emir shouldn't have existed, Brightness,
Nickley said.
It should always have been like it is now. Barren, too cold for much to grow. It isn't like Thalena, with favorable ocean currents nearby. But those old Amians, they knew ways to make it lush, alive. There are stories of fantastical devices that transformed Emir from wasteland to paradise. I guess it was beautiful. I've imagined it that way when hearing the stories. But?
Rissen prompted.
Well, the people who attacked Emir quickly realized that destroying these devices would catastrophically undermine the place.
He shrugged.
That's really all I know. Without these Fabrials, I guess they were. Without them, the island couldn't sustain a nation. Many were killed in the wars. Others fled. And the place has always been subject to unusual storms, so it became unlivable. It was looted, abandoned. Those who survived came to live near us and wept for their doomed paradise.
The melancholy in his voice made her look up from her writing. He glanced at her, then excused himself and went off to get something to eat.
Rissen watched him go, tapping her pen against her paper. Curious.
Footsteps on the stones made her glance up to find a single figure, backlit by the bonfire, approaching. The Horn-Eater woman, Cord, carrying a bowl of stew.
Stew,
she explained in Alethi, gesturing it toward Rissen.
I make. Try.
Rissen accepted the bowl, feeling the warmth through the wood. It was good. Fish stew, with a unique blend of spices she'd come to associate with the Horn-Eater woman's meals. The crew certainly enjoyed having her on board. Her food was a huge improvement over the previous cook's offerings. Rissen ate quietly,
as Cord settled down on the rocks beside her.
Captain? Cord asked.
I'm not the captain, Rissen said gently.
Yes, I forget word, Cord said. But, Brightness, thing we saw, corpse becoming gremlings. I know of this thing.
You do?
In peaks, Cord said. We have gods, and some are... I explained that this thing is... Ah, these words! Why do none speak ones that work?
The Horneater Peaks are in Yakeved, right?
Rissen said, switching to Vaden.
We can try this, if it's easier for you.
Cord's eyes went wide, and a single awspren, like a ring of expanding smoke, exploded behind her.
You speak Vaden?
Of course, Rissen said.
She cut herself off from saying it was very similar to Alethi, and easy to learn once you knew that language. Easy was a relative term, and these days, Rissen was keenly aware that what was easy for one person could be a challenge for another.
It was part of my training as a trade master. Alethi, Vaden, Azish, even some Iriali.
Oh, Malalinika, Cord said, taking her hand. Someone who can speak a proper tongue. I wish I'd known this sooner. Listen. The creature we saw. The dead Santhid. That is a god. Not Captain Rissen. A powerful god.
Interesting, Rissen said. What kind of god?
My people know the gods well, Cord said, speaking quickly, eagerly. There are gods that you call Spren. There are gods that are like people. But some gods are neither. The one we met is of a group called the Gods Who Sleep Not.
And they hide in attics, Rissen said. And devour the people who live in the homes?
Tuli eating na. Foolish lowlander talk. Listen. They are a swarm of creatures, but they have one mind each. They have traveled our land, always as a creeping group of gremlings. They are not evil, but they are extremely secretive.
I appreciate the information, Rissen said, thoughtful. Can you tell me more of these gods who don't sleep?
Maybe, Cord said. I know that lowlanders do not listen to our stories or think them true. But please understand. These gods guard treasures. Powerful, terrible treasures.
That part sounds encouraging, Rissen said.
Yes, but these gods are so dangerous, not Captain. They are associated with Apaliki Tokoa A. Who lead to treasure. And the stories speak of trials, tests.
What do you think we should do? Turn back?
I do not know, Cord said, wringing her hands. I have no personal experience. My father might know more if I were to write to him.
Where is he? Rissen said. I will let you use my span reeds, if they can reach him. I will listen to any information you find on these beings, no matter how insignificant it may seem at first.
My father is at Urithiru, Cord said, gripping her hand again. Thank you.
Yes, that would help.
She stopped and looked sharply at the sky.
Cord?
Rissen asked.
Spren, she said. In the sky.
I don't see any,
Rissen said, frowning and glancing upward.
Did one of the stars move?
No, not star, Spren, Cord said. Apaliki Tokoa A,
Lopan called them. Luck, Spren. She frowned. They are swirling around in the sky and keep darting toward the ocean, then returning. They dislike that we have delayed. They want us to continue our voyage.
Wait, Rissen said. I've seen Luck Spren flying with sky eels in the past. There aren't any in the sky right now.
Oh, Cord said. You did not know? I see Spren, even those that do not want to be seen. He is a gift to my family and others of my kin. She pointed. There are 12 Luck Spren, I count.
Interesting, Rissen said. Is that why the Radiance brought you?
Well, Cord said, I think also Lopan wants to impress me, maybe. Anyway, yes, I was uncertain at first, but was persuaded. The Radiance and Rushu wanted me to watch for Spren that might have to do with Amia. So I am here. She smiled. You have no idea how nice this is to talk. Well, that was one mystery cleared up. Cord's presence on the trip finally made sense. But it was another secret Rissen couldn't understand why the Radiance had kept, save for the fact that they worked for the Alethi. It seemed that group kept secrets out of principle.
You work with the Thalen guilds, Rissen reminded herself. The Alethi aren't the only ones who weaponize information.
Cord, she said, a thought occurring to her.
Could you tell if someone was hiding behind an illusion? Perhaps if they were not human but pretending to be, using light weaving?
I do not think so, Cord said. She glanced at the sky again. We must continue this voyage, Brightness, not Captain. These Spren are not high gods, but near to them. They urge us forward. But we must be cautious.
A call rose from the fire, and Huyo waved for Cord to return. He was tending the stew in her absence. So she excused herself and hurried over. Rissen stirred at her bowl, taking bites, but suddenly unable to enjoy the flavor. In an odd way, she felt trapped between her own expectations and the very real worry that she was in over her head. Was she pressing forward stubbornly to prove herself and endangering everyone? This seemed like the exact wrong time for Vestim to have turned to politics. His sailors needed him, and Rissen was a poor replacement. She also worried so much about Chiri Chiri. But was it right for her to endanger so many others to save one being? Both the Alethi Queen and Cord encouraged her forward, but they weren't responsible for the lives of the Wandersail's crew. Rissen was. She needed to care for them, even if they didn't trust her or respect her. She needed to be the woman Vestim thought she was, somehow. Her ruminations were interrupted as Lopan, Huyo, and Rushu left the fire and walked toward her. Sitting apart tonight had so far not quite accomplished her goal of solitude. Rissen tucked her self-doubt away behind a tradeswoman's mask and nodded to them in welcome. They were speaking quietly in Alethi as they approached.
He still feels bad, Lopan was saying, but I worried about this. Huyo, I said to him, whenever you build a sandwich, you accidentally put the flatbread in the middle. How are you going to put back together a fabrial?
It's true, Huyo admitted. Middle bread taste good.
Your fingers get wet, Lopan said.
Wet fingers taste good, Huyo said.
Rushu ignored them, instead kneeling beside Rissen's chair. It was her more comfortable one, padded and wider than the one with the wheels on the back legs, so it was broad and sturdy enough that Rushu could look all the way underneath.
If you don't mind, the Ardent said,
then proceeded to start working on the bottom of the chair without waiting for a response. Rissen blushed
and tucked her skirts up tight against her legs. She did mind. People generally didn't understand how much Rissen saw her chairs as part of who she was. Fiddling with one was like touching her own person.
In fact, Rissen said, I would prefer if you asked first, Ardent Rushu.
I did ask.
Ask, then wait for a reply.
Rushu hesitated, then pulled out from underneath the chair.
Ah, I apologize. Brightness Navani did warn me about how I act sometimes.
She settled on her heels.
I have something I wish to try on your chair, with Fabrials. May I proceed?
You may,
Rissen said. Rushu leaned forward and returned to work. Nickley approached and shot Rissen a look that seemed to ask whether she needed help. Rissen shook her head. Not yet.
Ardent Rushu, Lopan asked. I cannot help noticing that you have not given an explanation to me or Brightness Rissen about what it is you want to do.
You say more than enough for both of us, Lopan,
Rushu replied.
Ha!
Huyo said. Lopan grinned, putting a hand to his head.
A fellow has to try all the words, Sela, to see which ones make for good matches and which ones don't.
Rushu grunted her response from somewhere underneath Rissen.
Words are like foods,
Lopan said, settling down on the rocks nearby.
You've got to taste them all. And foods change over time, you know. How they taste, what they mean.
People change, Rushu said. Your tastes change, not the food.
Nah, it's the food, Lopan said. Because I'm still me, you see. I've always been me. That's the only thing I can really know, that I'm me. And so if the flavor of something changes, then the only thing I can say for sure is it tastes different, you know? So it changed.
Huh, Rushu said. Lopan?
Yes, Ella?
Have you had someone read you Pleadix's introspections?
Nah, Lopan said.
Why? Because that sounded almost like you were espousing.
Espousing, he said. I'm not married, Sela. I suspect the ladies think there is too much Lopan, by at least one arm at this point, sure, for them to hold.
Never mind, Rushu said. Rissen, I should explain better. I apologize for that as well. You see, I discovered something alarming today.
When we saw the Santhid?
Rissen asked.
Hmm? Oh, no, I was napping during that. No, those two windrunners were playing with my span reeds this morning.
Correction, Lopan said. Huyo was playing with them. I was being a responsible cousin and making fun of him for doing so.
Right, Rushu said. So Huyo is solely to blame for this genius discovery, then?
He exactly is.
Lopan paused.
Genius? Genius?
Huyo asked.
He left a bit of foiled aluminum in the mechanism, Rushu said, and it is interfering with the conjoined rubies in a fascinating way.
She scooted back from Rissen's chair, then stood up and waved into the distance. Rissen's chair shook.
Oh,
Rushu said.
This is another part I should have explained first, isn't it? Navani would be so upset with me. The rubies are connected to a chain and anchor. Not the main anchor, don't panic. We don't want to send you into the stratosphere. Look over there at that tree. See it? I had the sailors bring out one of the smaller anchors and tie it to ropes hung from branches.
In the distance, a sailor waved toward them. Rissen could make out a small anchor hanging from the tree nearby. Rushu pointed up into the air, and the sailors did something with the rope. Rissen's chair lurched into the air about 2 feet. She cried out, grabbing the armrests. Chiri Chiri finally woke up on the stone nearby, raising her head and chirping.
It feels unsteady,
Rissen said.
Should it wobble like this?
No, Rushu said, but she was grinning.
Huyo, do you realize what you have done?
Make wobbles,
he said. Then his eyes opened wide.
It wobbles. Wobbles side to side.
He let out an exclamation in Herdazian that Rissen didn't understand, then grabbed Rushu's hand, barely able to contain his excitement. Lopan folded his arms as he sat.
Will someone please explain how these wobbles are so entrancing?
He gyrated his hips.
They do look fun, mind you. The Lopan approves of wobbling.
If I may touch your chair, Brightness,
Rushu asked,
and nudge you to the side?
Go ahead,
Rissen said. Rushu gently pushed Rissen's chair,
and it moved. She drifted a few feet to the side.
This is supposed to be impossible,
Rissen said.
You said
yes, Rushu said. Conjoined rubies are supposed to match each other's movement exactly. To move you 2 feet to the left, we should be required to move that anchor 2 feet to the right, which we aren't doing.
Rissen hovered there, trying to figure out the implications. Huyo said something in Herdazian and put a hand to his head, and two Ospren in a row burst behind him.
It changes all things.
Well, maybe not all things, Rushu said. But yes, this is important. Rissen, the aluminum is interfering with the mechanism, making the conjoinment uneven. The paired rubies still transfer vertical movement, but not lateral movement. So you will go up and down with the motion of the anchor, but then can move laterally in any direction you want.
I need a pole, Rissen said, waving, to see if I can do it on my own.
The Lopan found a branch for her from among some fallen limbs nearby. She used it to steady herself, then, biting her lip, she heaved against the rocks.
It worked.
She soared a few feet through the air as if she were gliding across water in her own personal gondola. She had to stop with the branch, because once she got going, there wasn't a lot to slow her except air resistance. She tried to turn the chair around, but it resisted spinning. She was able to manage it only with some effort. Then she pulled back near her original spot. Rushu said.
You had to turn the anchor to spin. The mechanism must still have rotation conjoined. Perhaps by experimenting with the aluminum we can fix that. At any rate, this is an amazing development.
You're saying, the Lopan said, standing, that by breaking your fabrial, Huyo fixed it also?
More science happens through lucky accidents than you'd believe, Radiant Lopan,
Rushu said.
It makes me wonder how many amazing innovations we've passed up because we were searching for something else and didn't realize what we'd done. There's a chance I wouldn't have understood the value in what Radiant Huyo did if I hadn't been thinking specifically about Brightness Rissen's chair. As it was, when he brought me the broken span reed, it was curiosity about her predicament that made me... Brightness? Are you well?
They both looked to Rissen, who'd been struggling to keep her composure as they chatted. She finally failed, and the tears started flowing. Chiri-Chiri chirped and leaped up, flapping her wings to help her get high enough to grab the chair with her mouth. Rissen scooped her up with one arm, holding to the branch with the other.
I am well,
she said, with as much dignity as she could manage through the tears and the joy spren.
How could she explain?
She'd tasted freedom. Something forbidden her for 2 years. Everyone else pranced around without ever having to worry they were a burden to others, never remaining in the same place when they longed to move around because they didn't want to be a bother. They didn't know what they had, but Rissen knew exactly what she'd lost.
"Hey," Lopin said, taking the arm of the chair to steady it. "Feels good, I bet. You deserve this, Gansha."
"How can you know that?" Rissen said. "We've known each other for only a few weeks."
"I'm a good judge of character," Lopin said with a grin. "Besides, everyone deserves this."
He nodded to her, and a little windspren, in the shape of a one-armed youth, wandered through the air over to Lopin. Or, no, it wasn't a windspren, something else. A radiant spren. It was the first time one had appeared to her, and this one bowed in a very official-seeming way. Then he broke into several copies, which all raised hands to wave at her.
"Forgive Rua," Lopin said. "He's a bit weird."
"I... thank you, Rua," she said.
"I'm going to have to remove those gems on the chair for now, Brightness," Rushu said. "We'll need to use at least 3 for stability in the future, and I'll want to strengthen the housings. After that, we'll want to rig a way for you to order the anchor raised and lowered somewhere on the ship, so you can hover or not with a command."
"Yes, of course," Rissen said, but she clung to Chiri Chiri as she was forced back to the mundane ground, the precious gemstones stolen away. She could bear it. Something better was coming. She saw independence, and it was glorious. Even if she could merely move about the deck of the ship on her own, pulling herself along the railing, it would be a huge improvement. And the people who had helped her so much via span read over the past few months, gifting her the equipment they'd developed, urging her towards self-sufficiency, she would soon have a repayment for them. Oh, storms, would she?
"Guess this will mean putting me out of a job," Nickley said, walking over.
Rissen felt a spike of worry for him.
"For now, this will only get me around the ship, if it ends up working. I suspect I'll have need of your strong arms for some time yet, Nickley."
However, he was smiling.
"I would like nothing more than to be put out of this job, Rissen," he said softly,
then hesitated.
"This is an important discovery for so many people. You should make certain to transfer it quickly via span read, so it is not lost in case something happens to this expedition."
"Wise,"
Rissen said, glancing toward the dimming bonfire. The night was growing late. They'd soon need to get on the ship for the night. There was no storm today, and they'd be safer in these foreign lands, out on the ocean, than they would be trying to camp on the beach.
"In fact, Ardent Rushu, you should probably inform others now. Don't sit upon this news."
Rissen gave the order to return to the Wandersail, and everyone started packing up. Rushu did as asked, while the Lopin explained to the sailors what had happened. Nickley knelt beside her chair.
"Brightness," he said. "It's not my place, I realize, to interfere in the doings of Light Eyes, but..."
"Go ahead,"
Rissen said.
"Do you mind telling me what that horn eater said to you earlier?"
"We talked about Spren and about her gods. Why?"
"The other night," he whispered, "I overheard her saying something suspicious. She really wanted the expedition to continue. She's too eager. Something feels wrong, like, I don't know, Brightness, like we're heading into some kind of trap."
"I think your suspicion is misplaced, Nickley,"
Rissen said.
"Maybe, maybe," he said, bobbing his head. "But earlier, did she warn you toward caution? Or did she encourage you forward?"
"She encouraged me forward with caution," Rissen said. In that she's no different from the Alethi Queen or Queen Navani or even Queen Fen. All want us to succeed.
Yet they keep secrets. Lie to us, Nikli said. I know I'm nobody important, Brightness, but if I were to come to you with proof of the Horn Eater's ill will toward us, would it help you see that something is wrong here?
I suppose it would, Rissen said, frowning. But why would Nikli be so worried? Though Cord had used invisible spren only she could see as proof that Rissen should continue. And Navani had kept part of the truth from Rissen. About one thing, certainly. Perhaps about others? But it made no sense. Cord was with the Radiance, and they trusted her. Why would Navani ask Rissen to go on this mission, then try to undermine it? Unless they were more divided than they seemed. Or unless... Her suspicion was piqued. Thank you, Nikli, she said. You were wise to bring this to me.
I worry they're playing us for fools, Brightness, he whispered. I don't like being manipulated to do radiant work. Perhaps we should turn back?
Get me your proof first, Rissen said. And for now, don't tell anyone what you've told me.
10. Rissen pulled herself along the port rail, and her chair, hovering in place a foot and a half off the deck, glided smoothly in response. She made it to the prow, then unlocked the mechanism that Rushu and Huyo had installed on her seat. It was based on a spinning serving dish and let the top of her seat rotate, while the bottom portion with the gemstones stayed in place. Rissen spun around so she faced the other direction, then pulled herself back toward where she'd started. Because there was no real resistance once she began, it wasn't difficult work. But she did hold tightly to the rail, as she couldn't help imagining some situation where the ship turned and she somehow, despite the wall in the way, ended up hovering out over the ocean. She soon reached where Nikli sat, the vibrant white tattoos that covered his face gleaming as he smiled.
That joy on your face, Brightness, he said, his voice lightly accented. I don't know that I've ever seen it on a person before.
She grinned and turned her seat again, but this time locked it with her back to the rolling ocean so she could observe the working sailors. As the ship rocked on the waves, her chair threatened to slide to the side, and she had to reach out to Nikli to steady herself. The mechanism needed some refinement, some way to attach her seat to the rail when she stopped. Still, she could barely contain her enthusiasm. Rushu had rigged a weight to the mast, connected via conjoined rubies, so Rissen could raise herself up to the height of the quarterdeck if she wanted. She couldn't lower her chair back down, unfortunately, without help to lift the counterweight. But for now, she enjoyed more individual mobility than she'd ever had since her accident. It felt wonderful. So good, in fact, that she turned and began pulling herself in the other direction again. And as she did so, she noticed the sailors watching her. Was it because of the oddity of her floating chair? Or because she risked interrupting their workflow, moving among them as she did? Though one of them nodded as she passed, and then another raised his fist toward her.
They're rooting me on, she realized.
In that moment, she finally felt a kinship with the crew, a bond of understanding. What kind of person sought work on a sailing vessel? The type who longed for freedom, who wasn't content to sit where they were told, but instead wanted to see something new. A person who wanted to chase the horizon. Perhaps she was imagining too much, but whatever their reasons, another raised a fist as he passed. The gesture seemed to propel her as she crossed the deck. As she swiveled and made her way back yet again, she noticed Cord stepping out onto the main deck. It was time. Rissen nodded to Nickley, and he slipped off below decks. Rissen was about to have her suspicions confirmed. She tried not to think about how much it would hurt. Cord took up a position near the prow. Ignoring her arms, which were beginning to ache from the difficulty of stopping and starting, Rissen turned and pulled herself that direction, eventually coming to a hovering rest beside the horn-eater woman. Rissen's chair put her a little higher than she was accustomed to sitting. If this worked, would she someday be able to hover in conversations at eye level with everyone else, even when they were all standing? A way to avoid feeling like a child among adults? Cord was staring to the northwest. Over the last few days, they'd come within sight of Aemia, a large wind-swept island roughly the size of Thalina. Rissen had received some additional information from Vestim, everything they knew about the Scouring so many centuries ago, and it confirmed what Nickley had told her. The cold temperature of the surrounding waters and the general exposure to storms left Aemia barren. It was basically uninhabited to this day. The smaller island they now thought was Akina lay farther up along the coast, though it was unnamed on maps. Until recently, most scholars had assumed it to be one of the many islands clustered around Aemia that were now barren, nothing but creme and dust. And frequent localized storms in this region, along with treacherous rock formations just under the water's surface, historically made this region unpopular for sailors to explore. Rissen could make out clouds on the horizon, their first indication that the ship was nearing its destination, the sight of the strange weather pattern that they believed hid Akina. Cord stared out at those clouds, holding to the rail, her long red hair streaming behind her in the wind.
"This next part might be dangerous, Cord," Rissen noted in Vaden. "The Wandersail is a sturdy ship, among the best in the fleet, but no vessel is ever safe on rough seas."
"I understand," Cord said softly.
"We could go to port," Rissen noted. "There's a small watchpost on Aemia proper, where our queen keeps a few men to survey the nearby seas for void-bringer patrols. We could stop there to send Spanreed messages and drop you off."
"Why me?" Cord asked. "Why ask me?"
"Because our conversation earlier gave me the feeling you were forced on this trip," Rissen said. "And I want to make certain you are comfortable proceeding."
"I wasn't forced," she said. "I was hesitant, so your concern is appreciated. I want to go forward, though."
Rissen held herself steady, hands on the rail, watching the shifting ocean. And those ominous clouds.
"The Radiance, I understand. They've been ordered to do this, like my sailors. Rushu is interested in the scholarly side, and I'm here for Chirichiri. But you're not Radiant, Cord. You're not a soldier or a scholar. You're not even a Lethi. So why join such a dangerous excursion?"
"They needed someone who could see Spren," she replied, glancing up at the sky.
15 today." "I understand why you were sent," Rissen said, "but not why you came. Does that make sense? Why did you want to join us, Cord?"
"I suppose he is a good question," Cord said, leaning on the railing. "You are a merchant. Always looking for what motivates people, right? Well, when I lived in the peaks, I liked my home, my world. I never wanted to leave. But then I did,
to join my father. And you know what I found? A world? A frightening world, Cord said, narrowing her eyes. He is a strange place. And I realized that I liked him.
Being afraid?
No. Being able to prove that I could survive frightening things. She smiled. But as to why I came here, this trip, treasure.
Treasure?
Rissin said, glancing over her shoulder. Nickley hadn't returned yet.
That's it?
We have stories of this place, Akina, Cord said. Great treasure. I wanted some of him.
It seemed such a mundane answer, but Rissin supposed she shouldn't have been surprised. Wealth was the grand motivator that was common to all of humankind. It was part of why she'd become a trader, subjecting herself to apprenticeship. But it felt wrong to hear the words coming from this tall, horn-eater woman. She seemed so contemplative, so solitary. Was that really all there was to her? A desire for money?
Well, Rissin said, if we do find treasure, then we will all be wealthy.
Cord nodded curtly. She stood almost like a ship's figurehead. Rissin glanced over her shoulder again and at last saw Nickley slipping up the steps. He caught her gaze and gestured urgently. Rissin excused herself, then spun her chair and pulled her way over to the man. He leaned in, then took something from his pocket, a small pouch.
What is it? Rissin asked softly. Blackbane, he whispered. A virulent poison, prepared in its strength. I found it hidden among the horn-eater woman's things. Brightness, I think this is likely what was used to kill the ship's pet. The group from Eurythiru didn't arrive on the ship until after the pet was dead, but they were in town the night before.
How can you be certain this killed Screech?
Rissin asked.
I've heard of this poison before, Nickley said. It is said to make a person's skin darken when it kills them, and I heard that poor Screech's skin was off color when they found her. Brightness, it's clear now. The Radiants are lying to us. Why would they work so hard to undermine the trip?
Why indeed?
Rissin whispered. She unfolded a small red handkerchief from her pocket and waved it. Kostled had been waiting for this. He rushed down the steps from the quarterdeck, hand on his sword, joined by two of his best soldiers. Lopan and Huyo, who had been hovering near the ship instead of scouting outward as usual, dropped to the deck as well.
Rebsk, Kostled asked her, is it time?
Yes, Rissin said. Take him.
Nickley didn't have time to so much as cry out. Kostled had him against the deck in seconds, a sturdy rope binding his wrists. It drew attention from the sailors, but the two armsmen waved them back to their work, and they went, knowing they'd get an explanation eventually. News didn't remain secret long in such close confines.
What? Nickley spluttered. Brightness, what are you doing? I revealed the traitor to you.
Yes, you did, Rissin said.
She'd had days to prepare for this event, ever since she'd become certain Nickley was the one creating the omens. It hurt anyway.
Damnation. He seemed so genuine.
Kostled finished binding Nickley and pulled him over and up to his knees. Nickley looked at her, and his next objections died on his lips. He seemed to know she wouldn't believe them.
Of all the people I spoke to, Nickley, she said, only you constantly tried to get me to turn back. And once you realized I wasn't accepting the omens, you saw me searching for the culprit. So you manufactured one for me.
He didn't respond, bowing his head.
When I had Kistled thoroughly search Cord's room yesterday, we found no sign of this bag of poison in her things, Rissin said. Yet you magically found one, along with claiming expert knowledge on how it was used to kill the ship's pet.
I see, Nikli finally said, that you learned all of Vistim's lessons, Brightness.
Being betrayed by someone you trust is painful beyond explanation, Rissin whispered. But that is never a reason to pretend it can't happen.
Nikli sagged further.
Why, Nikli?
Rissin asked.
I have failed. I will say nothing more, Rissin, but to beg you, with all sincerity, to turn back. I can make